Hello and welcome to the Food Connections podcast, the podcast that connects you with the food you eat. I'm Dr. Laura Wyness, a registered nutritionist and one of Scotland's regional food tourism ambassadors. I'm interested in all things related to food and nutrition, and I love learning more about the food we eat, how it's made, and getting to know the people involved in making our food. This episode is all about coffee. Eve McFarlane set up Argyle Coffee Roasters in 2018. Previous to this, she had worked as an editor and in digital marketing. In 2012, she decided she'd had enough of city living and headed to the family cottage in Portavadie near Tinnebruch on Argyll's secret coast. The cottage was small, damp and run down, but the idea was to live there for a year, do some writing and live off the land. Over time, she met some of the local food and drink producers in the area and saw how vibrant the food scene was in Argyll. She also spotted how vibrant the specialty coffee scene was in Glasgow and Edinburgh, and so she began hatching a plan to roast specialty coffee in Argyll. Michael joined Argyll Coffee Roasters in September 2021 as Roasters Operations Manager. He first visited the area 11 years ago and immediately fell in love with the wild landscape. Michael has a degree in neuroscience and for almost 20 years was responsible for the management and conduct of global clinical trials, so he's excited to bring his scientific knowledge to the roasting process. As the business continues to thrive, he's responsible for establishing the systems and processes needed for controlled and sustainable growth. As a coffee lover myself, I am delighted to speak with Eve and Michael to find out more about coffee roasting and to get their insight on what makes a good coffee. I hope you enjoy listening. So welcome to the podcast. I'm joined today by Eve and Michael. How are you?
We're great, thank you.
Awesome, thank you very much.
I'm very excited to talk to you this morning. I actually came across your coffee a few years ago, I think. One of my friends suggested that I try it because it was so good, which I did. And then I actually met you in real life back, early this year at the Scott Hot. Yeah, the Scottish Hospitality Conference in Glasgow. So could you paint the picture where you're based?
Sure. So we're based in Tinnebruch, which is a small village, and it's in this area called Argyll Secret Coast, which is a kind of southern tip of Cowell Peninsula. So it's very beautiful in a kind of wild way. It's less well known perhaps than the sort of the west coast as you go. People tend to head further north. So it's quite a sort of, it's a quieter area. Tourists tend to not come here in their masses. You've got these beautiful sea lochs. You've got this beautiful coastline. We're flanked by these two stretches of water. You've got Loch Fyne and the Kyles of Bute. You get a lot of sailors. You get the Waverley steaming down the Kyles to visit. So yeah, it's lots of coastline, sandy beaches and these sort of beautiful ancient oak woodlands as well as kind of a feature of the area. So very, very beautiful, very wild, but we're actually 2 hours from Glasgow. I think what's interesting about the area too is there's a very sort of strong sense of community here, a lot of real interest in food and production. There's quite a few sort of local businesses doing sort of fun stuff. I've actually got someone who grows tea just up the road, and lots of collaboration and different businesses working together here.
So yeah, quite a big food scene then. And how did it all come about then, starting coffee roasters in Argyll?
I know. Well, it's interesting. So it was 2018 we actually launched, but, you know, many sort of years of thinking and planning and, you know, there's quite a lot of work went into it. I had just two small girls. So it's sort of as when they went to bed, I'd sort of sit down and start thinking about it. Start doing a bit of training with the Specialty Coffee Association. You can do sort of training on roasting, and you can do training on barista skills, on sourcing green coffee. Started sort of doing a few of those. And then before I know it, you'd kind of ordered this roaster from the US and it was on its way. You know, I remember I used to drop the kids off at nursery and I used to walk dog with my friend after drop off. And one day she was like, I'm going to make candles. And I was like, I'm going to roast coffee. And let's just say it to each other like that. And actually, she's now set up Argyll Botany, which is this amazing company that she does. And here we are with Argyll Coffee Roasters. But I mean, it was a massive learning curve, so much to learn just to get going. You know, learning the roasting, ordering the roaster, you know, just finding somewhere to base it in a rural area is actually really hard. You know, finding the sort of unit that you can set it all up in. But there's this amazing sort of local support. And because I, you know, made those contacts with all these different foodie people and cafes, there's people that were kind of ready to come on board. Mm-hmm. So the initial idea was that we would supply wholesale to cafes around Argyll. And that wasn't just sort of supplying the coffee, but it was supplying that whole kind of support, because there's you know, a big part of it is how you make the coffee, that in terms of how the coffee will then taste. So we had, there was a lot of training, a lot of working with cafes, sort of building up those skills. Then lockdown came, mm-hmm. which, crikey, what we're going to do here. But that was really interesting because people started ordering coffee online to drink at home, and they were doing, it was very different. It was sort of people wanting to experiment and try different coffees and use different ways to brew their coffee. So this was this whole new area that we kind of got on board with. And it was actually really good for us. And we set up our subscription coffee service where, you can sign up for like a different coffee every 2 weeks and try. So that really grew. And then when all the cafes opened up again, we've sort of almost, I would say, they work alongside each other now. They're both really important parts of the business.
And I love your branding as well. It's got a little white cottage on it. Is that the cottage that is the family cottage that you moved into?
Yeah, it's not because we don't have the red roof, but it's very similar. It's that kind of shape. But we do, like around Tynebury, there's a couple of cottages that have got these beautiful, like the red roof and the white walls. Just a little, it was, when you're sort of trying to think of your brand when you're setting up, I was like, what kind of represents what we're doing? And it was quite hard to actually find an image, but it's just worked really well for us. It just sort of, it's really sort of sums it up.
It's very recognizable, and it's really emotive. We find that the name of the company and the logo, locally it's associated just with really good coffee, but when visitors come into the area, they find it a really emotive brand because it reminds me of their holidays, or maybe childhood holidays in Argyll. For me, for sure, it really is evocative. I used to spend an awful lot of time as a kid on the Isle of Mull. And so red tin roofs and just that wilderness, that sense of adventure, I think you've managed to harness really well into the brand. And it's for me, it's as much an emotional draw as it is about the coffee.
Yeah, no, it certainly feels that way when you drink that cup of coffee. It does make you just feel a lot better. But Michael, how did you get into the business then?
So my background isn't coffee at all. I'm a scientist by training and education. I am a neuroscientist, but for 20 years, I worked in drug development. I ran clinical trials, global clinical trials, developing new drugs. And that was great. I learned a lot. I worked with some really incredible people, but I was missing something tangible and authentic and creative. I moved over to the area about 3 years ago. I've had a house here for almost 10 years, but just as lockdown eased and we were allowed to start moving around again, I found that I could work from home in my cottage in Argyll, and I just started hanging out at the roastery, and Eve and I would share our ideas for the future, what it was going to be. And we realized that we had separately kind of started thinking down the same track, that Eve was getting to the point with the business where she needed someone else to step in, and I was looking for something to get my hands on. And so we had this really perfect moment of synergy one morning, sat waiting for a ferry over to Kintyre, where Eve basically suggested that I should join the team. And so I did. In September 2021, I joined part-time, and as of just over a year ago, I am full-time member of staff running the day-to-day operations. So coming from another highly regulated industry, I'd be able to apply the knowledge I've gathered there to put into place quite strict protocols and systems that allow us to consistently produce a brilliant product, but also it's a building a foundation for growth. As the brand becomes more recognizable and we get more larger scale customers onto our books, it means that we're not going to be fighting for air, trying to catch up with ourselves. We're ready to go. So it's been a really lovely transition, not going to lie, going from an organization of 30 odd thousand people to Eve, me and the roasting machine, crunching gear change, but definitely one of my better life choices, I think.
Yeah, sounds like it. And what an easy job interview that must have been as well.
A good chat over a cup of coffee.
And I think also we have very different skills, and it was just brilliant to bring Michael in at that point where, the certain skills you need to get the business up and running. And then actually at this point, when you want to grow, it's quite, you need someone who knows about protocols, putting in those quality controls. It's all about systems and procedures.
But weirdly, having those very different skill sets and in some ways different outlooks on things, We've yet to cross words over any business decisions. We're very, very in tune. That day will come, I'm sure. But it's been an absolute joy so far. It really has.
Oh, sounds like bliss. And has your background, Eve, as well, has that helped to feel in the business at all, been a complete change?
No, it's definitely helped. So my background's kind of editing, marketing, communications. And when I initially moved up here to do my year of writing and kind of being in the cottage, I started to pick up a bit of work for local businesses that were generally connected with food and tourism. So I made all those connections, which was really important for then to get the business going. But just being able to, I suppose, having those communication skills, the knowledge of marketing, has just really helped in getting the business off the ground for sure.
Yeah, it's a key part of, I suppose, any business is getting your brand known and out there. And coffee drinking generally in Scotland, it feels like it has been increasing in popularity over recent years. What's your insight in the kind of industry?
Definitely a boom industry. The statistics for Scottish coffee consumption are fairly thin on the ground, but typically they follow the general trends for the UK. And the UK, it's the fifth biggest consumer of coffee in Europe. It's a huge industry. In Scotland, for sure, tea is still the preferred drink, but there is definitely a growth market there. Back in 2008, the British Coffee Association ran a survey where they estimated that the UK population drank 28 million cups of coffee a day. By 2021, that had increased to 98 million cups of coffee a day. So definitely, definitely a
huge increase. Yeah.
Enormous. Mm-hmm. Still, instant coffee is the biggest type of coffee consumed at home, far and away the most popular. But the introduction of coffee pods, love them or hate them, has definitely opened up a whole variety of coffee to the home consumer. It's introduced folks to single origin coffee and to different blends, different ways of preparing coffee in a really convenient way. But that for us has been a gateway to specialty coffee consumption at home. As Eve mentioned earlier, during lockdown, people suddenly, they had time and they weren't able to go to their local coffee shop. So they invested time and energy into preparing coffee at home and really got into it. We reckon that about 15% of home coffee consumption in the UK at the moment is specialty coffee. So there is definitely, definitely room to grow. Specialty coffee we'll speak about in a moment, but it's basically the top end of the coffee market. The top 20% of coffee beans are graded as specialty, but Eve can tell us more about that shortly. So specialty coffee is absolutely a growing market. Interestingly, back in 2021, there was a survey of the most Googled cities for coffee shops. Edinburgh ranked number one in the UK, and Glasgow ranked number four. So it definitely feels from anecdotal evidence that Scotland is leading the UK in terms of this desire to get our hands on really well-prepared, good quality coffee.
And it's really interesting because there's a really vibrant specialty coffee scene in Glasgow and Edinburgh, and actually up north as well. And it's really collaborative. People really work together, the different roasters. And, you know, the Glasgow Coffee Festival, organised by Dear Green, absolutely amazing place to go. It's almost like you're meeting up with your friends there and all these different people who are kind of, you know, this sort of shared love of specialty coffee and, you know, kind of, it's a real community.
It's like Disneyland for coffee producers. It's magical.
And everyone's very alert as well.
Very wide-eyed.
Which sounds great, having those types of events and the scene, the coffee scene. I mean, coffee, I'm sure, is quite a complex thing. And there's obviously a lot to learn about coffee and roasting and making a good brew. So can we get onto the science-y side of things now? And well, I guess, first of all, where do you source your beans from?
So like Michael mentioned, it's all specialty grade. So basically that means it gets scored out of 100, something that scores 80 and above. So that's for aroma, flavour, other attributes. So basically, specialty coffee is grown at high altitude. certain climatic conditions. So the soil conditions gives it its sort of those beans their unique flavour. That's their sort of attributes as a result of where they're grown. But as much specialty coffee is also about those sort of building relationships, gives farmers access to much higher profit, which in turn sort of supports their families and the community. So we source our coffee through two or three sort of trusted importers, suppliers. And we always know the full story. It's sort of completely traceable to origin. So we know who grows it. We know the conditions. We know how it's processed. We kind of, that's really important to us. And that we also, you know, we like to supply all that information to our customers as well, because we think that's a really important part of our product. So the amount we pay for our beans is much higher than the base rate for coffee, as determined by the stock market. So, and it's also significantly higher than the fair trade price. So really what you're talking about is a much more equal relationship with the producer and the buyer, and the producer sets the price. And over time, what we want to do is get even more direct relationships. So we want to work directly with the farmers and the producers, and we build that relationship and have ongoing relationships. So year on year, you're buying from the same farm and you can provide that sort of stability and sustainability. So yeah, that's how we source our beans. The other important thing we like to follow is keeping our beans seasonal. So coffee crops at different times of the year around the world, and we sort of want to follow that calendar. So you've always got like the freshest, most seasonal beans. So the next beans to come in will be Guatemalan season. They're about to land. It's always kind of exciting time when like the new, you know, the new season beans are coming in. And that's all kind of part of the enjoyment of coffee as well. It's not having that same bean available all year round. It's sort of looking forward to that sort of seasonal aspect of it. I think that's also, yeah, really important.
I never actually thought about the seasonality of coffee before, but yeah, it's so true that depending on where you source it in the world, it's going to be in season at different points. So,
And it's weird. It becomes part of your own personal calendar. You, much in the same way as here in Argyle, like bluebells come in May, you have the heather coming around about now, Tanzania's just dropped, and you kind of get excited about those flavors. Even I get really excited when Kenya first arrives. It's you look forward, as he says, to these different different beans arriving and the different characters they bring. It's it definitely becomes part of just your seasonal change. And it's something I never really anticipated before. We were drinking different coffees on a daily basis, and suddenly it's like, yeah, okay, we're it's Guatemala now.
And that's why this we do like the coffee adventure subscription, and you basically taste your way around the world following that the seasonal crop of coffee. And it's just brilliant because you don't know what's coming, but it's in season, and you'll get farm notes with your coffee. You'll learn who's grown it. You know, it's just a really lovely way to experience coffee.
And you're not going to love everything. You'll find something you absolutely adore, something you're maybe not so keen on, but that's part of the journey, right? The whole sensory experience of coffee, you really learn to understand your own palate and your own sensibilities through trying different flavors, different profiles. And I just think that's so exciting.
Exactly. It sounds like mindful eating, which I often encourage my clients to do. So eating more mindfully, being aware of the flavors and the tastes and the temperatures and everything. So and your food story, I love the fact that you talk about where the actual bean was grown and the story of who produced it, because that's all helping people connect more with the food they eat, which is ultimately the aim.
The traceability that we have with specialty coffee. There's one farm in Peru that we use. We've used Thomas's farm for the past
4 or 5 years.
And so the level of information we can get, we know that he inherited the farm from his grandparents. His grandparents planted shade trees to protect the coffee bushes from the midday sun. So he still grows his coffee in the shade of the trees planted by his grandparents. There are cedar trees in Nispero. So we even right down to the type of trees grown for shade and the family heritage, it all becomes part of the story. And it's very difficult to separate the experience of drinking the coffee from that knowledge. Once you have that information, it becomes just a single part of the experience.
And actually, Michael and I were talking the other day about what you mentioned, sort of the mindful eating, the mindful drinking. It's much about knowing the story, but also about the kind of the making of the coffee and that sort of ritual aspect of taking your time to kind of know your coffee and brew it to its best, and then actually sit and really taste it and really kind of enjoy those different flavors. Because I mean, we do it ourselves, but it's sort of knocking the coffee down to get your caffeine before you head off for the day. So different from actually, you know, I'm just going to sit and really enjoy this and savour this moment.
Coffee has taken this very interesting arc over the past 200-300 years from being a very elitist luxury product to something that is just a commodity. It's just knocking back your Nescafe before you go to work. And now we're seeing this curve back toward it becoming a luxury product, or at the very least, an artisan product again. Mm-hmm. With specialty coffee, typically about 25 different sets of hands handle your coffee from the tree to your cup. So it's this long chain of artisans, of people that are in the specialty coffee industry, putting their heart and soul into getting this product to you. They want it to be the absolute best that it can be. And so I think that we owe it to them to really take time to enjoy the preparation of your brew and then drinking it and just thinking, yeah, you know, this isn't just something I'm going to knock back before I jump in the car. It's something really special, and you should just take a moment to really savour it.
So true, yeah. And I guess it is quite a complex task, taking the bean from the bush to ending up in your coffee cup. So, yeah, what's the steps involved? Do you get the green bean then? And then
what arrives with us is the processed green bean. So the coffee bean, they grow on a bush, and they're cherries, essentially. And inside the cherry are the two beans, and they take, I think it's, so they, you get the fragrant flower first, and then you get the cherries, and then they, when they're ripe or ready to pick, they turn red. And again, that's all part of that keen eye of knowing the exact point that they're ripe and ready to harvest, because that can really affect the taste. And they're then processed in origin. And the processing of the beans can really impact the final flavour of the coffee. There's kind of two most common methods are washed and natural. So basically, washed coffee, the organic matter, the cherry, is taken off the bean straight away. Beans are washed to remove that mucilage before being dried. With the washed coffee, you tend to get a really crisp, kind of clean flavour profile. With the natural processed coffee, the coffee cherry is dried first with the fruit around the bean. So the bean basically has more time to interact with the natural sugars from the cherry. And then they're washed off afterwards. So what you tend to have is a kind of fruitier, some say funky kind of flavour with your naturals. It's the sort of, we can get really sweet flavour profiles of naturals. And then there's loads of other different ways that coffee growers are experimenting with processing methods, different processes going on, some really cool stuff going on at the moment, just to kind of give you these sort of different flavor profiles from basically, you know, the same bean. You can really take, if we did some tasting with you, we had a washed coffee next to a natural coffee and you sit them side by side, you would totally taste the difference, even if it's the bean from the same farm. It's quite an impact.
It is. It's absolutely fascinating how just that difference in process of removing the bean from the cherry can hugely impact the flavour. With the natural process, because the cherry has contact with the bean for longer, you have these fermentation processes going on and interactions with the sugars in the cherry and the sugars in the bean, which impart that really fruity, kind of funky flavour. Now, it fascinates me that something as simple as that can have a really huge impact on the flavour profile.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the first part. And I guess the other part that has a huge impact on the flavour is also the roasting of the beans. So what's involved in that? I know you mentioned you got a nice roasting machine sent over from the US. So... Was that worth the investment?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the absolute core of the business. This is basically it's a 12 kilo drum roaster. We tend to roast about 8 kilos at a time, but it does have the capacity to roast sort of smaller batches as well. beautiful machine.
Our bright pink roasting machine.
It wasn't meant to be pink. It was meant to be red. But we have that on pretty much every day roasting. You know,
which during the summer is an absolute nightmare, but during the winter, oh my goodness, that roasting machine is so welcome.
And so I take it there's lots of different ways of roasting and timings and...
Absolutely. Like everyone has a different way of baking a sponge cake, right? So roasting is basically just following a recipe, as it were. So we've removed the coffee bean from the cherry. We now have a green bean. That green bean is basically a cellulose matrix that contains a whole bunch of organic compounds. So it's got sugars, it's got lipids, it has proteins, it's got alkaloids, so trigonoline, and most saliently, caffeine, and volatile aromatic compounds, as well as a whole bunch of water still in the bean. Aromatic compounds, your green bean has about 200 discrete compounds that will impart some flavor. By the time that bean's roasted, it will have more like 800 or 900 discrete aromatic compounds that give it its flavor and its taste. It gives it its aroma. So our job as roasters is to apply heat to the beans at the right temperature and the right temperature gradient and for the right amount of time to ensure that the different compounds that make up the content of the bean are developed sufficiently to get a desirable combination of your acidity, your sweetness, your bitterness, as well as the right combination of those aromatic compounds that are intrinsic to the flavor of the bean. So when we first take delivery of a new batch of green beans, so when the Guatemalans come in later in the month, we will play around with them. We know from past experience roughly what kind of a roast profile will follow. So what temperature will drop the beans into the roaster at, how we will drop the temperature throughout the roast, the amount of time it will stay in there. But with every new batch of coffee, it demands some tweaking to get it right. So we'll play around with temperatures and timing and roast gradient, and also thinking about things like, is this coffee going to be intended for use in an espresso or a filter? That will, to some extent, drive the flavor notes we're looking for. Does it need to be big and bright and bold? Does it want to be kind of punchier and bassier? That will definitely inform our decision process as to what kind of a roast we're going for. So the roast profile, as I say, is set on some hard facts, the bare bones of the bean, how dense is it, what's its moisture content, what are we looking for, but also experience and honestly just a bit of gut instinct. If you think that a quick tweak of temperature halfway through the roast is going to help, give it a shot, try it. If it works, great. If not, we can do it again. So once you've agreed on the right profile, then we're going to lock it into a web-based app that we have called Cropster. And then we're going to follow that curve every time. We have this lovely graph that comes up on our computer screen. And we just try and emulate that each time so that every time we roast a specific type of coffee, we're going to have a consistent roast. Now, we will occasionally need to tweak that profile. For example, on a very humid day or a very cold day, we're going to need to compensate for environmental conditions. Or if we have a lot of green beans that are getting maybe slightly older, not past their best by any means, but they might need just a slightly different roast profile just to compensate for that. But typically the profile that we agree at initial delivery is going to be roughly the profile that will follow through the roasting process.
So it's very much a combination of science and a little bit of gut instinct.
Absolutely.
And art.
I think you can't quite take the human out of roasting. Not yet. Not until AI gets a whole lot more sensitive, I think. But
and it's just lots of tasting. So try a roast, taste it, tweak it. Think we'll do that, that will do that, and then we're like, actually no, it doesn't, this tastes, I love this, what we've, well, you know. So there is a little bit of just, you know, there's a lot of tasting and a bit of experimenting, isn't it?
And sometimes you can be halfway through a roast and think, oh no, I shouldn't have done that, but you cup it and you think, oh my goodness, I'm going to do that again. So we have this drum roaster, our big pink roasting machine. We charge our green beans into it, and the drum rotates like a washing machine just to keep the roasting even so that our beans don't scorch. So there are gas burners beneath the drum. So you have this very hot metal drum that is going to impart heat by conduction, and then there's hot air passing through the drum that imparts heat by convection. There's a little bit of radiation in there as well, but that's way beyond my knowledge of physics. So we won't go there. So once the beans are heating up, we start seeing some physical and chemical changes to the beans. So in terms of physical changes, that cellulose matrix of the beans, as it heats, it starts to weaken. And the water content of the beans, well, the water starts to evaporate. So what happens? Your beans start to swell. They grow in size. About maybe 7 or 8 minutes into the roast, each of the green beans is wrapped up in a little, it's called a silver skin, and it's a fibrous membrane that surrounds the bean. Now, there's a little fissure in each coffee bean, that little crack that you see down the running longitudinally down the bean. Mm-hmm. There's always a little bit of silver skin left in that fissure, even after processing. The silver skin will be released eventually. When the bean swells up, that fissure opens, and that little remnant of silver skin basically comes loose, and it makes this amazing kind of fluffy side product of a roasting called chaff. So we have a compost heap around the back of the roastery, and Eve uses that to grow her vegetables. So there's nothing wasted, basically. So the beans grow, and it releases they release their chaff, and then a couple of minutes after that, the bean becomes so brittle, and the evaporation makes the bean so swollen that, just like popcorn, it starts popping, and you can hear it. And it's like this very repetitive pop. It's called first crack, and that is basically the start of the end of the roast. That is where our biochemical reactions of the beans start happening. So you have this release of water from the beans, and that encourages caramelization, which is a decomposition of the sugars in the bean. That gives you some kind of caramelly notes, a bit of bitterness, a bit of sourness, maybe some fruity notes to the coffee. And then you have what are called Maillard reactions. Now, when you roast a piece of meat, that goes from being a piece of raw meat to brown meat, and the browning is caused by Maillard reactions. It's an interaction of free amino acids and releasing sugars. And in coffee terms, that gives us some bittersweet notes, and depending on the coffee type, either floral notes or maybe chocolatey notes. So you've got this whole bunch of biochemistry going on in there. And it blows my mind. I absolutely love it. So we get to the end of the roast, and the beans are still cooking on the inside. So we need to cool them down as quickly as possible. We drop the beans from the drum into this enormous big cooling bin. It's a big circular tray with a vent in the bottom of it and a rotating paddle that keeps the beans moving, and it draws room temperature air through the beans so we can cool them really rapidly to basically halt that development process. And then we have our roasted beans. So they're still releasing gases, they're releasing their aromatic compounds and a bit of carbon dioxide. So we let them sit. Depending on the type of bean and what the bean is ultimately going to be used for, we normally let them sit for 2-3 days, maybe a week, until we feel that they're ready to turn into a cup of coffee.
And then the testing comes again.
And then the testing comes
the final
again,
testing.
And again and again.
Wow, I had no idea. I never really thought about all that, the complexity of making coffee or just roasting coffee beans. Absolutely fascinating. Now, I know this next question might not be your favorite question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How is decaf coffee made?
It's funny, isn't it? Everyone thinks that decaffeination is a dirty word in the coffee industry. I love decaf. And certainly we're seeing a growing trend in specialty decaf. There is absolutely zero judgment on whether folks want their coffee caffeinated or not. But to go back to the beginning of the story. So we'll need to cast our minds back to Bremen in Germany in 1905 to a gentleman with the magnificent name of Ludwig Roselius. He is noted as being the first person to commercially decaffeinate coffee. Now, he did so by boiling his green beans in benzene. Now, benzene is highly carcinogenic, and I imagine it tastes nothing but grim. So I'm guessing the earliest consumers of decaf coffee probably had the most miserable time and probably didn't enjoy their coffee at all. But chemicals remained the main driver of decaffeination for a huge time. Right throughout the 20th century, we saw decaffeination still being driven by chemical processes. Even now, chemicals like methylene chloride and ethyl acetate are used to decaffeinate coffee. They're totally approved by the FDA in America, the Food and Drug Association, as being safe to use. But these chemicals do have known harmful side effects. So in terms of specialty coffee, that type of decaffeination, chemical decaffeination, is avoided. For specialty coffee terms, it's not just about the safety side of things, although, of course, that's always tantamount in everything we do, but it's about how that affects the taste of the coffee. Now, if you're going to be steeping your coffee in chemicals, it, by that very nature, it's going to impart some kind of residual taste. So the process for decaffeination used in the specialty coffee industry only uses natural products. There are two different ways of doing it. Both involve a solvent that's going to bind caffeine to release it from the bean. The first is the simplest process in the world. It's called the Swiss water process. Essentially, the process works by taking a batch of green coffee beans and soaking them in hot water. The heat expands the pores on the surface of the bean and allows the caffeine to escape into the water. Unfortunately, it also allows all of the aromatic compounds and the sugars and the alkaloids and the acids to escape as well. So you end up with green beans that are completely devoid of caffeine and flavor, and this extract that is saturated with both. Now, that first batch of green beans is done. We can't do anything with it. So that's discarded, and we're left with this extract. That's run through a carbon filter that removes the caffeine, but leaves all of the other compounds in place. So now you have an extract that has no caffeine, but is chock full of all of the compounds that you want in your coffee to give it its flavor. So that's used for the next batch of green beans. So it's heated up and the beans are soaked in it and the pores expand and the caffeine comes out. But because the extract is already saturated with all of the aromatic and flavor compounds, they stay in the bean. So that extract can be used time and time again, run through the filter, remove the caffeine. The caffeine, I should say, isn't disposed of. It's used in, for example, the energy drink market or whatever. That caffeine can be reused, but the extract can then be used time and time again. And because it's just water, it's entirely natural and it doesn't impart any residual flavor on the bean. So that's the water process. The other process that we occasionally see for specialty coffee is the carbon dioxide decaffeination process, which is my favorite because I'm a scientist and a bit of a geek. So in this process, we use carbon dioxide, again, a naturally occurring compound. As we know, at atmospheric pressure and room temperature, carbon dioxide is a gas. If you heat it up and you put it under intense pressure, it becomes a supercritical fluid. And if we heat that and soak our beans in that fluid, again, it will open the pores and release the caffeine. But CO2 doesn't bond any of the other compounds, only the caffeine. So we can remove the caffeine into the carbon dioxide, and then the beans are removed from that fluid. And if you release the pressure and cool it down, it turns into a gas again. All of the caffeine is released. Again, that can be used for whatever. And then you just heat up and repressurize the carbon dioxide and use it over and over again. Now, with the energy expended in heating it up and cooling it and pressurizing it and depressurizing it, it's very energy intense and very expensive. So that tends to be used only for really large batches of coffee. And we have seen carbon dioxide coffee in the roastery, but typically we tend to see water decaf instead coming through the roastery on small batches of specialty coffee. But that in a nutshell, in a big nutshell, is the decaffeination process. Does that make it any clearer?
Absolutely. That was such a good answer and very well explained. Thank you.
So I guess I have a question for you then. Are there any health benefits from drinking coffee that we know of?
Absolutely. I would say a cup of coffee provides a range of very small amounts of some vitamins and minerals. It is a rich source of potassium, which helps maintain a healthy blood pressure, and also contains some B vitamins and magnesium. And coffee also contains some fiber. So it might sound surprising, but a cup of coffee can contain as much as half a gram of fiber. And the fiber is a soluble fiber called phenolics. And these fiber compounds, along with the caffeine, that's what contributes in part to the bitter taste. And they're also very powerful antioxidants. It's not so much the vitamins and minerals in coffee that's of any note, but actually it's the antioxidants that is most beneficial in terms of health, potentially. And the fiber and the antioxidants encourage a greater diversity of microbes in your gut. The fibers help feed the good gut bacteria. So yeah, there's many health benefits. There's studies that show drinking between 1 and 3 cups of coffee a day is linked with lower risk of heart disease, liver disease, type 2 diabetes, compared to those who drink no coffee or those who drink a lot of coffee. So there is that kind of sweet spot. You can have too much of a good thing. It's really beneficial. And certainly the antioxidants or the compounds in coffee, really beneficial for liver health. And coffee has a protective effect regarding liver disease. Drinking coffee can help reduce the risk of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is probably something that's not really spoken about a lot, but around 1 in 4 people in the UK have a fatty liver. And whether it's the caffeine or maybe a combination of the caffeine plus antioxidants and plus some of the other plant compounds in coffee, it's really protective against non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So yeah, I would almost encourage a cup of coffee a day for all the health benefits.
I love that.
Especially the gut flora. I always kind of assumed that because of the acidity of coffee, that would probably be negatively impactful on gut flora. That is every day's a school day.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, some people are more sensitive to caffeine. So certainly the fibers and the plant compounds help encourage the healthy bacteria in your gut. So, and coffee, it does have a laxative effect as well. So it does get the bowels moving. Both caffeinated and decaf have that kind of effect. So
Always know your first coffee of the day.
So I do like my coffee myself, and I use a cafetiere. What makes a good coffee, basically? How best should I be brewing my coffee?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say necessarily a brew method is better than another one, but there are definitely sort of a few things you can do to really improve your brewing at home. So the first thing we would say is, if you can, always buy whole beans and grind freshly when you're making your coffee. Because basically, as soon as you grind coffee, you start to lose that sort of good stuff, starts to go stale. So basically, grind the coffee that you're going to use immediately before you make your coffee. That will make the biggest impact on your brew. If you're going to do one thing, invest in a good grinder. And again, it adds to that kind of sense of, I'm going to take my time over this. This is my morning ritual. I mean, it's just like 30 seconds to grind the coffee that you need, and you'll get that beautiful aroma coming off the freshly ground beans. That is the first thing to do. And then the second thing is to understand grind and to use the right grind size for your brew method. So if you're making espresso, you'll need a nice fine grind. If you're making cafetiere at the other end, it'll be a really coarse grind, and your filter is somewhere in the middle. We, you know, one of the biggest things that we do when we go into cafes is work with them around the grind that they're using, because often, you know, with an espresso machine, you haven't got the grind right, it'll gush through and you're not extracting all those beautiful flavors that you want to extract, and you're basically not making the most out of the coffee. So yeah, so get yourself a grinder, understand how grind will work with different brew methods, keeping things airtight. So basically, as soon as you open a bag of coffee, you're exposing coffee to oxygen and it'll start to degrade. So you need to, you know, once you've made your coffee, reseal it and wrap it tightly, and then in a cool, dry place. There's a golden ratio, which is really useful in terms of making coffee, which is 60 grams of coffee to a liter of water. And you can scale that up and down. And then, you know, it is really fun to try out different brew methods, use different bits of kit. I think like a pour over set is a really nice way to make coffee, whether that's a Chemex or a V60, you know, where you sit on the top of your cup you've got a really, you can get really sort of beautiful, clean tasting coffee out of that. It's a very simple way to make coffee. If you're going to buy some kit, I'd say pour over kit, some scales, and your grinder will make all the difference. And in terms of your cafetiere, we've actually got some brew guides on our website as well. So if you wanted to ever go and have a look, they're on there. But basically, with your cafetiere, you're using your 60 grams to a litre, and the water that you're using will be off the boil. Heat up your cafetiere, throw away the water, and then you're putting your freshly ground coffee in the bottom. And then you're pouring your hot water, circular motions, onto those grinds till it's about half full. And then you'll see, if you're using fresh coffee, you'll get this lovely bloom. It's this kind of bubbly crust that forms on the top, and it smells lovely. 2 minutes, give it a stir, and then fill it up to the top. Another 2 minutes, another stir, plunge, and you're ready. And you need to drink it straight away.
Gosh, I think I need to adjust my method slightly after that. Thanks for those tips. And actually, one question I did want to ask is, should you store coffee in the fridge?
Not unless you want it to pick up all those flavours that are in your fridge already.
Like, no one likes garlic.
No, I suppose not.
In the fridge, but cool and dry, out of sunlight, basically, and, you know, airtight. That's the key.
Fantastic. Okay. I'll let you know how I get on with my next brew.
Oh yeah, send us some pictures.
And before we finish off, apart from roasting coffee, what do you enjoy spending your time doing?
So as Eve mentioned right at the top of the podcast, we're really lucky to live in what I think is one of the most beautiful parts of Scotland. So I just spend my time being out in that, either up in the hills. I have a little boat, so I get out on the water. I'm lucky enough to have a boat very close to a seal colony. So especially at this time of year, I can go out on the water and just watch the seals in and out of off the rocks. And that's just joyful. I'm also a member of our local Coast Guard station. So we are often called out, especially during the summer, we're on call out. So yeah, I think people imagine that living away out here is kind of this bucolic, quiet country life where nothing happens. Quite the opposite. It's there's an awful lot going on out here.
And a keen photographer as well. I've been kind of having a look at your Instagram, the secret diary Argyle.
My dad was a professional photographer, and so whilst he never taught me photography, I think that I picked something up. So certainly when I hit my 40s, I got the bug, and so I can often be seen out in the woods or on the mountains with my camera. So secret diary Argyle on Instagram, in case anyone wants to go and have a little.
And it's great. So we never make a nice coffee, or the latte art comes off in the roast out. Michael, quick, take a picture of it.
So I have to drop whatever I'm doing, we get my camera out, and I'm photographing this coffee. This is my life now.
that latte art is really difficult to do. I went on a latte art course, and I was no use whatsoever.
I see it as a sort of lifelong learning latte art.
Definitely an expectation when people just assume that because you roast coffee, you're going to be able to
have
a swan or a dragon or something magnificent. If I can get a little heart, I'm really happy.
And what about yourself, Eve? What do you like?
I've got two young girls. Ava's 9, Tess is 6. So basically, my time is generally spent ferrying them into gymnastics or swimming, or, you know, it's that life. But basically, we've got our cottages right by the sea. We've discovered paddleboarding. We love just kind of scooting around the coast. I have got back into running. I'm in training for the Kyle's 10 Miles, which is our local road run, and that's in September. So I've got a month to go.
Be thinking of you.
Thank you.
And I guess just one final question, do you have a favorite type of coffee, or is there a favorite meal that you'd like to drink your coffee with?
So favorite coffee, again, I don't have a favorite coffee. What I love is, you know, when the new season coffee comes in and you're enjoying this sort of, you know, enjoying that moment. But I would say what I do really enjoy are those big fruity African Rwandan coffees. When that comes in, they're phenomenal, the phenomenal filter. In terms of stuff with coffee, I would say something sweet just goes so well with it. And we have a local baker, Leoma, who's got Wild Kitchen, our girl. She does amazing baking. We've got a coffee bar up the road that she sort of bakes these amazing cinnamon buns for. They're incredible. But she also does tablet, which nutritionally I know is not good. A tiny little bit of super sweet. Her tablet with the coffee is beyond.
I think I am very much in your camp, even in terms of I don't have a particular favorite. It really absolutely depends on my mood. Sometimes I want to have a pour over filter. Sometimes I want to have an espresso. For me, going back to what we were saying earlier, it's all about that ritual and just taking a moment to stop and think and just really enjoy what you're doing, rather than we're so busy all the time these days, everybody. And so just using coffee as a punctuation mark in your day, just to take a little break and a breather and just think about what you're doing and to really enjoy it. That to me is where the pleasure lies. In terms of a coffee and food, I am quite a fan of an espresso martini. And I recently learned that if you grate the tiniest bit of Parmesan on the top of your espresso, sounds awful, I know, try it. Life change.
Okay. Not totally convinced, but yeah, we'll see. I'll give it a go. I should also say that it's probably best not to drink coffee or tea with a meal, because I often get clients who have low iron levels, and the tannins in tea and coffee can prevent the absorption of iron from plant foods in a meal. So always leave a gap of at least half an hour before or after a meal before you have your brew.
I have cake with it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no rules in that. But no, I love that, having that kind of mindful moment, drinking a cup of coffee, and that I've got a newfound appreciation for roasting and coffee in general now. So thank you so much for all your insights. It's absolutely fascinating.
Oh, it's been brilliant to chat to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. It really has.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this Food Connections podcast. Do check out the show notes for some useful links related to this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could give it a rating and leave a short review. It means so much. And please do spread the word and tell others about it. If you have any comments or suggestions for future guests, do get in touch. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.